Only a Matter of Time by Alan Plater, with Alan David as Meredith and James Bolam as Fanshawe.
Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And when they do, maybe somebody else will look after it for them.
Good morning.
Morning.
I don't mean to stop you working, but can you tell me where I am?
You here, in this field.
Obviously, but where precisely is this field?
Well, this is the hay field. That's what I'm doing, see, turning the hay. It rained last night, so I got to turn it over so the sun can dry it. Then, more than likely, it'll rain again tonight, and I'll have to do it all again tomorrow. It's the hills, you see. The rain gathers in the hills.
I'm totally familiar with the climate and topography of this area. I simply need to know where I am.
If you need to know where you are, you must be lost.
Temporarily, I trust.
Where do you want to go?
I'm looking for a village.
We've got plenty of those. Walk in any direction you fancy, you'll find a village.
I'm not looking for any village. I'm looking for a particular village. But I don't know how to pronounce its name, since I neither speak nor read Welsh.
Ah.
Here, I have it written down.
Mm-hmm. Now then.
Can you direct me to this place?
Well, I don't know for certain.
Oh, for God's sake, man, you're local to the area. You must know where it is.
Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But it's impossible for me to say for certain, because I can't read what's written here.
You're illiterate.
They tell me so.
You can't read.
I can't read.
Ergo, you are illiterate.
Let's just say, thank you for showing me your piece of paper, sir, but it is wasted on me.
And my time seems to be wasted on you.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. You're lost, and I might be able to help you. We try to be courteous to strangers.
How can you help me?
Now, let me think about that. I could send you to the vicar, or the squire. They can both read, so they could read what's written on your piece of paper. Then you might not be lost anymore.
Good. Where will I find the vicar or the squire?
The vicar will probably be at the vicarage, unless he's going about his pastoral duties, unless he's at the church. The squire will be at the big house, unless he's out hunting, unless he's gone to the races.
Can you direct me to the big house?
I certainly can.
How can I find the big house?
Oh, you go across this field, corner to corner like.
Diagonally.
Is that the same as corner to corner?
That's what the word means.
Well, when you've done your diagonally, you go across the cornfield, and then across the barley field, and then through the cows, being careful to keep clear of the bull, and then through the wood, being careful when crossing the ford, and then through the estate, being careful to avoid the squire's dogs.
You say the vicar can also read?
Yes. But only the English and the Latin. He doesn't have the Welsh. Same as the squire. He doesn't have the Welsh either. So, if your piece of writing is in Welsh, it would be wasted on them too.
Could you show me the way to the village?
I would be happy to. As soon as I finish work.
And when do you finish work?
When the sun goes down.
But that will be hours.
It's a big field.
Oh, this is absurd. Just give me directions to the village.
Happily. But I can only do that if I know which one you want to go to.
Any damn village will do. The nearest village.
Now, that's difficult, sir, being that several of the villages are the nearest, owing to the position of this particular field. You need to give me a little more help.
I can't read Welsh, but its name begins Lan. Lan something or other.
Clan something or other.
Do any of the villages which you claim are equidistant from this field, do any of them begin with the prefix Lan?
Prefix Clan. I never heard of a place called Prefix Plant.
Forget the prefix. Do any of them begin with land?
Ah, now that's different. Well, we got Llanfaches, Llanbeda, Llanmartin, Llanfaidysgoed, Llandefni, Llanwern, Llanhenno.
That's enough.
There's more, depending how far you want to walk.
I've walked far enough for one day, mostly in circles.
Is it not your horse that's done the walking?
I suppose it is.
He looks as if he needs a drink.
I suppose it does.
Look, as soon as I work my way to the corner of the field there, I'll show you where there's a nice stream and he can have a drink. We can have a drink too. There, no. That's a happy horse.
At least the horse is happy.
Will you take a drink?
What is it?
Beer.
I never drink beer.
There's nothing better for quenching the thirst when you're working in the fields all day.
Well, I suppose it is quite a warm day.
Long as you don't mind sharing the bottle. I wasn't expecting company, you see. Yes, wipe it with your handkerchief. A sensible chap. I took you for a sensible chap from the first. Good God! A fine brew, yes?
Where did you buy this stuff?
Bless you, sir. Nobody buys beer. Oh. We make it ourselves.
I should have guessed. What do you put in it?
Whatever comes to hand. Oats, barley, acorns. The secret is to leave it for a while. The longer you leave it, the better it is. Another drop?
No, thank you.
Bread and cheese.
Do you make those yourself?
How else do you get bread and cheese?
In London, one buys them from the baker and the grocer.
Bakers, grocers, and the like. We reckon them all to be thieves.
That's absurd.
Look, you pay a penny to the baker for a loaf. But if you bake it yourself, it costs a farthing. That leaves 3 farthings for the baker. Now, that's got to be thieving, the way we see it.
That's free trade.
It might be free trade in London. In Wales, it's thieving.
This is a very interesting cheese.
I'll tell my wife. The gentleman from London says you make an interesting cheese, my dear. She'd be very pleased to know it. Will you have another lump?
No, thank you. That was more than adequate.
If you're from London, you're a long way from home.
Well, it's the nature of my business.
What line of business would that be?
Bit of a technical nature.
Does that mean it's a secret?
Oh, no. Everyone will know about it very soon.
Why don't you tell me about it?
It's a little complicated.
Oh, if I understand what you're doing, I can probably be of help telling all my friends. And if I'm too stupid to understand, it'll go no further than me and the horse.
Very well, since I seem to be marooned here for the rest of the afternoon.
Oh, but what a lovely place to be marooned. Look at it. Isn't it a treat to behold?
Yes, I suppose it is.
No, tell me about your business.
Do you know about Mr. Brunel?
Mr. Brunel?
Mr. Isambard Kingdom Brunel.
I can't say that I do.
His name is constantly in the newspapers.
I don't read newspapers. I've got nothing against them. I've seen them. They look very nice. I just can't read the writing.
Mr. Brunel is an engineer.
Is he now?
A builder of ships and bridges and railways.
That must keep him very busy.
He is a very busy man, and a great one.
And he's a friend of yours, this Mr. Brunel.
I work for him.
What class of work would that be?
I go ahead of the engineers and artisans, preparing the people for what is to come.
Preparing for what is to come? You sound like a priest.
I suppose I am, in a way. Thanks to Mr. Brunel and others like him, we truly have it within our power to create a kingdom of heaven here on the good earth.
Does this include our village?
This includes your village.
Once we know which village you're looking for.
Obviously, we need to clarify that aspect of the project.
And how will you turn our village into this kingdom of heaven?
Your village will be transformed with the arrival of the railway.
the railway.
Quite so. You do understand what I'm talking about.
Well, I know about railways.
Have you ever seen one?
No. I never go any place where they have such things. But I've heard about them.
What have you heard?
The railways are noisy and dirty and dangerous. They fill the air with filth that causes great sickness. And the trains are always coming off the lines and killing and maiming people.
That's an exaggeration. Who's been telling you such tales?
My cousin.
And is your cousin an engineering expert?
My cousin left the land to go to the valleys to work in the coal and in the iron. He says they have little railways and little steam engines to move the stuff around faster. He says they go too fast at the behest of the masters. The boilers explode and the trucks come off the rails. And that's when the killing and the maiming start. There's hardly a working man left in the valley with a complete set of limbs, according to my cousin.
Mr. Brunel's railway will be quite different.
How will it be different? No smoke and no steam?
Of course there'll be smoke and steam. You can't have a railway without smoke and steam. You can't have a British Empire without smoke and steam.
Look, I'm just a farmer tending the land. But do we need a railway? And do we need an empire?
Of course we do, man. How else shall we maintain our prosperity?
Prosperity?
You know what the word means.
Well, it's like the railway. I've had it described to me, but I've never met it face to face.
Suppose I tell you that the coming of the railways will bring prosperity to this area.
Supposing you tell me that.
Well, don't you want prosperity?
All you said was, supposing. You didn't tell me how Mr. Brunel's railway will make me prosperous.
You are a farmer.
And you are an observant chap.
The coming of the railway will open up new markets for the food you grow.
I got a market. I go there on market day.
But you might get a better price for your food in the markets in Cardiff, or Bristol, or London.
You want me to load all my stuff? The corn, the barley, the oats, the cattle and the sheep, and take them up to London and sell them there?
Why not?
Will I have to buy a ticket?
A ticket?
A ticket to ride on the train to London.
Obviously.
And another ticket for the sheep and the cattle and the corn and the barley.
Of course, you'll have to pay for the conveyance of the freight.
So I spent a fortune on tickets and I'm not even at the market yet.
But what we're talking about is progress. The triumph of man's imagination.
You may be talking about that, but I'm talking about is tickets. On market day, I walk to the market. My beasts walk to the market. You don't have to buy a ticket for walking, do you?
But it's very simple. You will pass on the extra cost to the people buying your produce in the London market.
So they'll be buying my sheep and cattle and corn and barley, and they'll be paying for all those railway tickets as well.
That will be the effect, yes.
Will they also pay me to pay somebody to look after the fields while I'm riding up and down to London on Mr. Brunel's train?
Of course they will. They won't realise it. But
yeah, but how will that make them more prosperous?
I beg your pardon?
You say your railway will make everybody more prosperous. But so far, what you tell me is that I will have to spend more money, and my customers will have to spend more money. And what about the London farmers? Will they come on Mr. Brunel's train and sell their sheep and cattle and corn and barley in the markets in Wales?
What I'm saying is that every farmer in the land will be free to sell in whatever market he can get the best price. Whether it's London, Manchester, Glasgow, or even Paris, Rome, or Berlin. The world is shrinking day by day, you see.
Because of Mr. Brunel's ships and trains.
Not only Mr. Brunel. There are many others like him.
I see.
I wonder...
You'd like another drop of beer?
If I may, it's terribly warm in the sun.
Certainly you may. Here's another question.
Please, I'm here to answer questions on behalf of the railway company.
London is a prosperous city, am I correct?
Of course, it's the centre of the British Empire. The greatest empire the world has ever seen.
Supposing all the farmers in the land find out they can get a better price in London for their sheep and cattle and corn and barley than anywhere else, won't they all go to market in London? On these trains of yours?
Obviously. That's how markets operate.
What will the people here in Wales eat?
I'm sure your farmers will always grow enough food to go round.
But it isn't about food, the way you tell it. It's about money.
Well, of course it's about money. Have you read Adam Smith?
I haven't read anybody, sir, being that I can't read.
Ah, forgive me.
Though I can recite much of the authorized version of the Holy Bible.
And I'm sure you can.
So what does he have to say, this Mr. Smith? Is he a friend of Mr. Brunel's?
He argues that the wealth of nations is built on the free movement of money and goods, and on letting people like Mr. Brunel get on with their business.
Does he have anything to say about starvation?
Starvation?
There was starvation in the valleys in the 30s, and there were hunger riots. The authorities sent in the militia, and then there were deportations and public executions.
All that was the work of agitators and troublemakers. And besides, these are the 1840s.
The 1840s are going to be better than the 1830s.
Of course they are. This is an age of progress and enlightenment. We can learn from the lessons of the past. We can achieve anything we set our minds to. Imagine, within your lifetime, you will be able to travel to Cardiff in half an hour. And to London in 4 hours.
But I don't want to go to Cardiff. I don't want to go to London. I'm happy staying here. You're obviously a well-educated man, and you've been very generous in answering my questions. But as far as your railway is concerned, it seems to me like the invention of the devil himself, and best forgotten. No disrespect to you, Mr...
Fanshawe.
Mr. Fanshawe.
And you are?
Meredith.
Well, Mr. Meredith.
Meredith.
It makes no difference what you think. All the plans have been made, the land has been acquired, the navvies are building the railway lines, and they will arrive here within the year.
We get the railway whether we want it or not.
Precisely.
So why are you here?
I am here on a totally different errand. I am here to discuss... time.
Time.
Time. Can you tell the time?
Well, I know the time.
You know the time?
Certainly I do. The sun rises, I come into the fields. The sun sets, I go home. On the seventh day, I rest.
Do you go to church?
Of course I do.
How do you know what time to go to church?
The bell rings.
But if I show you my watch...
My... That's a fine-looking watch, Mr. Fanshawe.
Can you read it? Can you understand what it's telling you?
No. My cousin can read a watch. It's considered very important, apparently, if you work with the iron and the coal, but no, I never learned to read a watch. Is that why you come to Wales? To teach us all to read your watch?
I suppose, philosophically speaking, yes, I have.
Well, why don't you practice on me? I'm a good and keen learner, according to the vicar. Could have made a scholar, he says.
I dare say you could, Mr. Meredith.
Let's put it to the test.
Very well. May I...
Another little drop of beer to give you the strength for the ordeal to come.
If I may. Thank you.
Oh, you are more than welcome, Mr. Fanshawe.
You're a very generous chap, Meredith.
When you live on a border between countries, you have to decide whether you are a warrior or a peacemaker. The vicar says, I have the constitution of a warrior with the soul of a peacemaker. So, drink your beer, Mr. Fanshawe, and teach me about time.
What do you understand by the word noon?
Well, that's easy. It's when the sun is highest in the sky.
How do you know when it's noon?
Today, it'll be when the shadow of that oak tree falls on the corner of that wall. But I don't have to look for the shadow, I just know in my bones.
And for me, noon is when both the hands of my watch point exactly upwards. You see? I'll move them to show you. 12 o'clock. Noon.
You can move the hands. Make them point wherever you want them to.
Yes.
That's like moving the sun.
I suppose it is. And I suppose that's why I'm here.
You're going to move the sun.
You understand that the sun moves across the sky.
Oh, I understand that, yes. I see it every day.
So, when it is noon in London, that happens at a different time from when it is noon here in Wales.
We got to wait for the sun to get from London to Wales. Yes, I understand that.
It takes about 11 minutes. Do you understand that?
My son understands clocks and watches. He says it takes 10 minutes for us to walk to church.
For the purpose of our illustration, 11 may be regarded as de facto the same as 10.
So it takes as long for the sun to get from London to here as it does for me to walk to church.
But you live by the sun and the bells.
Yes.
Soon we will all have to live by the clock.
Now you're confusing me, Mr. Funchal.
Noon is 12 o'clock.
When the hands point upwards.
Wherever you are. Can you understand that?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I don't understand what it means. Now, you say noon is when the hands point upwards. I say it's when the sun is highest. That means we have two noons, doesn't it? How can you have two noons? It's like having two Christmases.
Let me try again.
Oh, I wish you would. I'm finding this very puzzling.
When I set off on this journey, I travelled by coach from London to Bristol. Mm-hmm. When I arrived in Bristol, I had to change my watch by 10 minutes. Do you understand that?
Yes, because that's how long it takes for the sun to travel from London to Bristol.
And one more minute from Bristol to this field.
That's very clear. It means that your noon is the same as my noon.
Well, that is all going to change.
Why is it all going to change?
Because of the railway. We will have trains running east to west and west to east all day and all night. Imagine the confusion if all these thousands of passengers have to change their watches at every station. Imagine you yourself going to the new station in the village to catch the train to London.
Going to the market with my sheep and cattle?
Possibly so, yes. And you get there. But because you and the locomotive driver are operating on different timescales, you miss the train. By 11 minutes. We'll have total confusion and chaos.
If I understand this properly, it's also possible that I could be 11 minutes early, depending on the nature of this confusion between me and the driver. Or we could just use our brains.
Obviously, it could work both ways. But we plan to avoid all this confusion.
That won't be easy. I'm confused already.
We know exactly how to achieve this.
Are you able to tell me? Or is it a secret?
Of course I'm able to tell you. That is why I'm here. Mm-hmm. Every town and every village along Mr. Brunel's new railway line will adopt London time. When it is 12 noon in London, it will also be 12 noon in Bristol, Cardiff, Swansea and beyond until we reach the sea.
Everybody will have London's time.
Everybody will have London's time.
But what will you do about the sun?
We won't do anything about the sun.
But you'll have two noons, like I said before. There'll be one when the sun's at its highest, and another one when both your hands are sticking up in the air. They won't like that in the village, you know. No disrespect. But they might mark you down as some sort of lunatic.
The village, I regret to say, will have to do as it is told, as will everywhere else.
Who's doing the telling? You?
I'm here on behalf of the railway company.
Mr. Brunel's doing the telling.
You could express it that way.
But why do we have to have London's noon? Why can't London have our noon? We'd be happy to share it.
Because, as I said earlier, London is the centre of Great Britain and the Empire.
Well, I'm grateful to you for explaining all this to me. But I still cannot see this working. No man, even one as eminent as your Mr. Brunel, can say to the sun, you are in the wrong place. That's setting yourself up as God. And you can't do that.
Even so, this is the new age of reason. And that is what we are doing.
This is your job, then.
What?
Making your way from London to the sea, ordering everybody who can tell the time from a clock, that from now on they've got to live their lives by London time.
Yes, that's my job.
That's funny work for a grown man.
I could say the same of you, could I not?
I grow food. What's funny about that?
I'm helping to transform the world. What could be more important than that?
I tell you what's more important than transforming the world. Leaving it the way you found it.
That's absurd.
You see this field?
I do indeed. I feel as if I've been here all my life.
It's been farmland for hundreds of years, and it still bears a harvest. Why? Because it's been looked after properly. When I die, my sons and my grandsons will farm this land too, because I've looked after it properly. I'll hand it on to them the way I found it. Nobody transforms any of it. We leave things alone. That's God's way, and it's man's way.
I will make a prediction. That work you were doing when I arrived here this morning.
Turning the hay.
In time, we will invent machines to do that.
That's impossible.
In time, we will invent machines to do all your work.
What? A machine to milk the cows?
Everything.
Look, when my day's work is done, I shouldn't take you to the village. I should take you to the asylum.
No, I'm not insane.
You want me to move the sun and milk cows with machines?
I simply see further into the future than most people.
What else do you see?
A world without hard physical labour. A world of increased leisure, where men can devote that time to cultural pursuits and to the finer things of life. Music, painting, literature. Men will no longer be content as mere peasants.
Is that what I am? A mere peasant?
Of course you are.
And what are you, sir? A mere winder of clocks?
In a sense, yes, I suppose I am. But my winding and adjusting of the clocks will change the world out of all recognition.
And eventually, you will destroy me.
No, I will liberate you.
I believe the coal owners and iron masters said something similar to my cousin and his comrades in the valleys. Yes, definitely. Liberation was promised.
But the coal owners and the iron masters, they're all old men. We are a different generation.
Even so. You frighten me, sir.
In heaven's name, why should I frighten you?
Because you know you are right.
I would have thought that was to my credit.
In the village, we have a church and a chapel with a vicar and a preacher. They both know they are right, and they hate each other. The preacher says the vicar is a scoundrel, and the vicar says the preacher is an agent of the devil. They both believe in God, but the way they talk about it, there must be two gods. Two gods. And it's only a tiny village.
Two gods to go with your two nooms.
And then you come along with a whole new pack of gods, as far as I can see. I don't think we've got room for any more gods.
And which god do you believe in?
I believe in the soil. I believe in the sun. I believe in... What was that you called me before? A mere peasant?
I didn't mean to be offensive.
It isn't. You might say... I believe in being mere.
I say, that's awfully good.
It's awfully true, boy.
Ooh.
You look tired.
Oh, I had a hard morning riding around in circles, looking in vain for your village. And now the sun and the soporific effect of your beer...
I knew you'd get to like it. If you persevered.
It's rather more potent than I first realized.
Many travelers have made that discovery.
Oh.
So, why didn't you close your eyes? Your horse is safely grazing by the stream. I will go back to my work in the field. And when the sun sets, I will take you down into the village and you can go about your master's business.
What can a peasant do? A mere peasant. I know what my cousin in the valleys would say. Be a warrior, boy, he'd say. Take this pitchfork and stick it through the man's throat. And then what? Bury the body. Let the horse run free. And wait. Wait for what? We know for what. The authorities, the militia, the trial, the judge, the jury, the verdict, the public execution. As an example to the lower orders, to show them what happens when the lower orders forget their condition of lowliness. And if you kill the man from London, what difference does it make? They will send another man, and another, and another. And what if the man is right? Consider that. He has been educated. He's got a head stuffed full of learning. He can read and write until the time, and that certainly makes him cleverer than me. But it's when he starts seeing into the future. That's not clever, is it, boy? Because we'll never know if he's right or wrong. For God's sake, he can see machines milking cows. He can see me leading a life of prosperity and leisure, enjoying music, painting, literature. That's got to be lunacy of a very high order, hasn't it? If he and his kind think so highly of music and literature, why do they go to such great lengths to destroy ours? Why do they mock our bards and our ballads and our legends? Hmm? Why do they do that? Do we frighten them so? And why do they destroy our language? Why do they make us speak their language? Why don't they learn our language? Is it because they are too lazy or too stupid? I mean to say, I can speak his language and I can speak my own, but he can only speak his. He can't say Llan properly. He can't even say my name properly. So is he really cleverer than me? Maybe I'm twice as clever as he is. That's something to think about. And here's another thing. If we have London time, does that mean we also have London everything else? London clothes, London language, London bards, London ballads, London legends. If they have such things in London, there's no way of telling. But what use is all that to me? I don't need their songs and stories, even if they've got any. And they don't need mine. But it'll all come along that railway line. It won't be just passengers and freight on those trains. It'll be all the stuff you can't see. I suppose they're doing that all over that empire of theirs, unloading stuff you can't see on all those mere peasants. I should kill him. I should kill him. I should kill him. But I don't suppose I will. I should be ashamed of myself thinking these things. Calling myself a peacemaker and proud of it. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. And here I am, calmly considering an act of murder. What does the good book say about warriors? Blessed are the warriors, for they shall be called... What? Agitators and troublemakers, I suppose. Getting all sorts of fancy ideas from the French about slaughtering the aristocracy. But we don't do that here. We touch our caps and pay our rent and say thank you when they throw us odd little scraps of kindness. But they don't know what we are thinking. That man sleeping by the stream doesn't know what we are thinking. None of them will ever know what we are thinking. But we know what we are thinking. Whatever they tell us in the newspapers that we can't read, we know better. We know the true position of our sun.
The sun's going down, Mr. Fanshawe.
I'm ready.
We go this way. Once we reach the brow of the hill, we'll be able to see the village. My village. Then you can decide whether it's the right village.
Excellent.
When you're working in the field, what do you think about?
That's a strange question.
I was watching you turning the hay. Endless repetitive labour. You must do something to keep your mind occupied.
Idle thoughts, mostly.
There was a moment when your work brought you quite close to me. Seemed you were talking to yourself.
It's possible.
I simply wondered what you talked about. You see, I frequently talk to myself when I'm on these long, lonely journeys. Sometimes I recite poetry. Byron, Blake, Shelley.
I sometimes recite the Gospels.
Ah, a good book.
Not just the Gospels. The Gospels according to my father, and my mother, and my cousin, who went to work in the valleys.
The Welsh Gospels.
The Gospels according to all kinds of people I never knew. Most of them died hundreds of years ago. None of it's written down because they couldn't write, and I can't read.
And what do they teach you, these ancient prophets?
They teach us how we should behave towards strangers from London bearing gifts. But being Welsh, we hardly ever do as we are told. You should be grateful for that, sir. There. Now you can see our village. Is it the one you were looking for?
I believe it is.
There's the church, see? And the chapel at the other end of the street.
Yes. This is the place.
How can you tell?
I've studied the engineer's plans for the route of the railway line. I know them by heart. I recognise the topography of this landscape. The village nestling in the valley, the hill to the west.
We used to climb that hill when we were children. Now my children climb the hill.
I have a copy of the plans in my bag. Would you like to see them?
I've never seen plans in my life. That would be very interesting.
Yeah. There you are. It's like a picture from above. A bird's eye view.
What the sun might see.
There's your church. There's your chapel. There's your hill. And this is where the railway line will run.
It seems to run over the hill.
No, not over the hill. Nature abhors a vacuum and railway lines abhor a gradient.
I don't know what you mean.
Railways are like Roman roads. They run straight and level. We will remove the hill.
All of it?
No, not all of it. We will drive a cutting through the heart. It will look like one of your little Welsh valleys. Indeed, once the grass grows on the embankments at either side, you won't be able to tell the difference.
But what about the fountain?
Which fountain?
The fountain on the hill.
There is no fountain on the hill. If there were, it would be shown on the plans.
It isn't a real fountain. It's a little fast-flowing stream that feeds into a pool. The children play in the water. And being Welsh and fanciful and poetic, we call it a fountain. It has a name. We like to give things names.
I see. And what is it called, this imaginary fountain?
We call it Penderyn's fountain.
Penderyn?
Do you know about Penderyn?
The word means nothing.
It's a man's name, Dick Penderyn. Alleged to be one of the ringleaders in the Merthyr riots 10 years ago.
Ah, oh, that Penderyn, the agitator. I read about that in the newspapers. Hanged, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. To set an example to us all. But before the military caught him, he spent a night in hiding on our hill and drank water from our pool. That's why we call it Penderyn's Fountain.
It sounds like an old wives' tale.
My cousin told me about it.
And I'll wager every village in South Wales has a similar tale. You're like the country people in England, full of stories about witches and headless horsemen.
Dick Penderyn was real enough. You read about him in your newspaper.
But not this legend about the fountain that isn't really a fountain in the first place. It's gossip. It's hearsay.
Maybe it isn't a fountain, and maybe Penderyn never drank from it. But if I believe it, doesn't that make it true? You believe in machines that milk cows. I believe in Penderyn's fountain.
Heaven protect me from the Celtic imagination.
I think heaven is doing very well by you in that respect, Mr. Fanshawe.
And you may believe what you will, but when the railway comes, the hill will go, and with it the fountain, and with it the legend.
No, not the legend. The rest, yes, that will go, but not the legend. Even if it never happened, especially if it never happened. Those are the best legends. That's why I decided not to murder you.
I beg your pardon.
That's what I was really thinking about in the field. Should I murder you? but I decided against it.
I'm deeply grateful. Had you noticed that I carry a pistol?
No. I hadn't noticed that, but no matter. It would have made no difference to my decision.
Why did you decide not to murder me?
Because whatever you do, we will win in the end. Or you can remove our hills and rearrange our valleys and move the sun. And I dare say kill a few of us along the way if we start making mischief. We'll even learn to tell the time the London way. But you can't destroy what we believe in. Even if we believe in things that never happened.
I'm not impressed by airy-fairy nonsense about the Celtic soul.
I know you're not. That's why we'll win in the end. Now, shall we go down into the village? Be careful. The pathway is quite steep.